तम
the mind to be found.
Leela Sanjani in her beauty and magnificence of such women, the representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence. Text 14. The Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven, who were bowing before him, "Please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable for you. She will become an ornament of the heavenly planets." Report. Narayana Rishi was almost laughing upon seeing the defeat of the demigods. However, being extremely vague, he did not actually laugh. Although the demigods might have thought, quote, "We are simply both class fools in comparison to these women," unquote. The Lord encouraged them to choose one of the women, whomever they considered equal in character to themselves. The beauty thus selected would become the ornament of heaven. Text 15. Vibrating the sacred syllable, Om, the servants of the demigod selected for Vashi, the best of the Apsaras, facing her, in front of them, out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. 16. The servants of the demigods reached the assembly in Indra, and thus, with all the residents of the three heavens listened, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayana. When Indra heard of Narayana Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished. Text 17. The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as the Lord Kamsa, the swan, the Tathraya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Krishabhade. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearances, Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu and thus brought the devas back from the hellish planet Patala Loka. Report. It is stated in this Skanda Purana that the Lord of the universe, Hari himself, once appeared in the form of a young brahmachari named Kumara and spoke transcendental knowledge to Sanat Kumara. Next 18. In his appearance as a fish, the Lord protected Satyavrata Manu, the earth, and her valuable herbs. He protected them from the waters of annihilation as a boar. The Lord killed Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti, while delivering the earth from the universal waters. And as a tortoise, he lifted Mandara Mountain on his back, so that nectar could be churned from the ocean. The Lord saved the surrendered king of the elephants, Gajendra, who was suffering terrible distress from the grips of the crocodile. Verse 19. The Lord also delivered the tiny ascetic sages called the Bala Hillians when they fell into the water of a cow's footprint, and Indra laughed with them. The Lord then saved Indra when Indra was covered by darkness due to the sinful reactions for killing the Vritrasura. When the wives of the demigods were trapped in the palace of demons without any shelter, the Lord saved them. In his incarnation as the Shringha, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, to free the saintly devotees from fear. That's plenty. The Supreme Lord regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. The Lord thus encourages the demigods by detecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reigns of each mother. The Lord also hears Vanara and took the earth away from Bhavi Maharaj and the previous vain steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the sons of Parvati. Next 21. Lord Parashuram appears to the family of Rikku as a fire that burned ashes in the dynasty of Kaikaya. Thus Lord Parashuram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. The same Lord appeared as Ramachandra, the husband of Sita Devi, and thus he killed the 10-headed Ravana along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Sri Ram, whose glory is destroyed the contamination of the world, be victorious. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Ramachandra was more or less a contemporary incarnation of the nine Devendras. Thus they have been offered particular respect. Thus they have offered particular respect to Lord Ramachandra, as indicated by the word Jayati. Next 22. To diminish the burden of the earth, the unborn Lord will take birth in the Adi dynasty and perform feats impossible, even for the demigods. Propounding speculative philosophy, the Lord as Buddha will bewilder the unworthy performers of Vedic sacrifices. And as Kalki, the Lord will kill all the low-class men posing as rulers at the end of the age of Kali. It is understood that in this verse, the description of the Lord's appearance in the Yadu dynasty refers to the appearance of both Krishna and Balaram, who together removed the demoniac rulers who were burdening the earth. Srila Jiva Goswami has pointed out that the description of the incarnations to deal with Shudran or Lokasan refers to both Buddha and Kalki. Those who misuse Vedic sacrifice to engage in gross sense gratification, such as the killing of animals, are certainly in the category of Shudra, as are the so-called political leaders of Kalyuga, who perform many atrocities in the name of Satan. Final verse, next 23. O Vardhan King, there are innumerable appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord of the universe, similar to those I've already mentioned. In fact, the glories of the Supreme Lord are immense. And thus ends the purports of the humble servants of the divine grace. For the 11th canto, 4th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, titled, Drumala explains the incarnations of Godhead. So that was pretty quick. Moving from hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord of the Unchanged God, the demigods, to nice shortness of avatars or forms of the Lord here in this world. So, Drumala and these nine
put some context for this. Have no interest other than qualification of the personality and context. So when interacting with the king, guess what? They glorify the personality and context. And Dhruva in particular was selected to speak about his performance as he appears in this world, and he chose to describe one of those incarnations more extensively, not in our energy. Dharma and are the same as Krishna and Arjuna. The Nara teacher is Arjuna, and Narayana is Krishna. Krishna and Narayana are the same. Nara and Arjuna are the same. Different Lila, different teacher.
I am, so that it's
this sense of his power is none different than him. And this, the capacity of the devotee is none different than him. Bhakti, Shakti, the ability, the nice verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what Lord Chaitanya states, Krishna Shakti Vina Nani Tara Pravartana. One cannot induce others to even chant the holy name. Please chant, no. But if someone takes up chanting or any form of devotional service, it's by empowerment of Krishna to do so. It's not one's own independent ability. It's foolish to think otherwise. And the Supreme Lord, along with having power to empower his devotee, the Supreme Lord can, at his will, manifest whatever he wishes. In this case, the verse that we cited together, it's an explanation by Dhruvala, that Narayan, appreciating the devotion of the demigods, but also recognizing the pride that was mixed in with the devotion of the demigods, wish to remove their pride. Because Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of his devotee. So he showed some special mercy to relieve them of their pride. And he chose that particular way. He just manifested so many incredibly beautiful women. Purposely. The purpose was to reduce their pride. Vajranarayan Swami likes to quote this all the time, where in a desert, even a castor plant looks like a tree. In the desert, you don't have trees, you have desert. And supposing that little castor plants growing in the desert, well, that is formidable. But in a forest where there's big trees, what's a castor plant? Insignificant. So someone was thinking, I'm significant. One of the ways to diminish pride is to place opulence is unimaginable in comparison to that person's, whatever it is, opulence or ability. Of course, that can also create envy. And envy. Like Satraja, who Krishna was thinking, the most opulent personality, but Satraja is so proud of his Shamatapa jewel that he just completely ignored Krishna. His residence was outside of Dwarka, and when he got the Shamatapa jewel, he put the jewel on the chain on his neck, and proudly he strode into Dwarka. So boom, boom, boom. And ignored Krishna. And then Krishna went and asked for the jewel to give to Ugrasena. And he declined. No, I want the jewel. And he 70 pounds of gold and produced it again. So when a person becomes proud, especially with Krishna's devotee, who becomes proud, Krishna removes the pride. He removed the pride of Indra. He removed the pride of the gopis. Here he's removing the pride of the demigod. Krishna doesn't like pride. And the tendency for pride is really easy. All you have to do is just forget Krishna. And then whatever it is that you have, mind. Like the discussion last night about Mahamaya. The thing is more about this. The same place. One sees the place. And if one sees the place as Krishna's energy, Krishna's property, that's like being in a kingdom, it's Krishna's kingdom, he's the king of kings, it belongs to him. Then it acts one way, it's facility for service. Supposing someone receives some wealth. Facility for service, supposing one is not a devotee. Someone now is lying, I'll use it to get more. So on. The mind is living, use it to get more, just like Prabhupada said, he likes to look at it. He counts his money, how many I have, and contemplating one housewife devotee with this type of quality of her husband, he just likes to give his money. And thinks how he gets more money, that's his life. And you know, what's the position of devotion to Krishna? It's just happening things. But the same thing is, so there's illusion, illusory happiness, and then there's transcendental happiness. The transcendental happiness is, now I have something I can use it, and sadness, I don't have something I can't use it. And I'm hankering for something, so I can use it. And even hankering in Krishna, this Prabhupada's advice is for us, we make reasonable efforts to see what facility can be there for serving Krishna, and we use that facility for serving Krishna, and we're happy, we're contented. Not over endeavoring for something. We make an endeavor, but you know, in a reasonable fashion, for the purpose of service to Krishna. That's all. And our life is peaceful. But the demigods, they have this pride situation. I mentioned this the other day. A little equation, like a math equation. Fruits of piety plus heart that's impure equals pride every time. So the solution is make the heart pure. Not become impious or, you know, negative zero or something. The solution is make the heart pure. But that's where our endeavor or striving should go, make the heart pure. And in this case, Narayana is interested in making their hearts pure, removing their pride. So he diminished their sense of pride in their opulence of beauty and wealth and the ornaments that they wore and so forth, with spectacular, millions of times greater beauty and opulence and splendor. Like this castor plant in a desert. Or another example is the firefly at night. Zoom, zoom, there goes the firefly flying around. Oh, isn't it attractive or amazing? Or a whole bunch of them, they zoom around. And they don't have any radar system that we know of, and they don't crash. They zoom, zoom, zoom. But during the daytime, we saw those same fireflies zoom, zoom, zooming around. We wouldn't even notice it because there's the light of the sun. And the light of the sun was the light of the firefly. Inconsequential. In the presence of the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is one's opulence? It's not just people, not just demigods that become proud. I remember hearing several times Prabhupada saying, even the pauper is proud of his penny. He told the story he was very enthusiastic to go to Jagannath Puri to see Rath Yatra, so his father would take him. And one time they were on the train from Puri, excuse me, from Calcutta heading to Puri, and it was one of those places the train stops, so he got off with his father, and he saw on the platform one very poor couple, and they had a cloth, and they had pieces of discarded wood, and they're meticulously, they're counting their pieces of discarded wood, moving them from here to there, then putting them again in the bundle. And Prabhupada said, for that I could understand even a pauper is proud of his penny. What's the value? But, you know, the same. So somebody is something and somebody else is something else. But pride is there in the harvest. We think it's mine. And that's mine, it's not mine. But if you don't have knowledge of Krishna, then you say it's not mine, then who's his it was? Nobody's. Or doesn't exist, or some other philosophy. Impersonalism or Buddhism, to remove yourself from the false sense of proprietorship. But that's not correct either. It belongs to someone, it belongs to Krishna, everything. So pride is removed by recognizing the proprietorship of Krishna. And with proprietorship, it's within governments, the various versions, Prabhupada writes this in Isha Upanishad, various versions of government are centered around ideas of proprietorship. The state owns, capitalist owns, the people own, nobody owns. The different ideas of proprietorship, and they're all fiction. They're all baseless. They're all imaginative. People gather around this idea or that idea and form a political view of proprietorship, and then get together and rule. And then somebody else comes along, you don't like that idea, you like the other idea. So you have ideological clashes and friction amongst them, rather than very simple solution of recognizing everything belongs to God, which is the reality. And then live one's life accordingly, and it takes away pride. Because once it's recognized as the property of God, there's only one purpose for things, to be used in God's service. Or, like, you know, within a kingdom, if the property is the king, then the land is the property of the king. And I'm an agriculture person, because largely the Varian society was the previous economic base. So I am allotted a certain amount of land that belongs to the king. That's the landholder notion. And I work and develop products from the land. And I'm allowed by the king, I keep a certain portion, and a certain portion goes to the king. But it belongs to the king. And by his, you know, by arrangements, I then can keep some portion. Anyway, that has derived, the situation of kings own the land, is derived from the higher principle that the king is the representative of God. Saintly king represents God, and ultimately belongs to God, so the king ministers according to God's law. That's the natural. And then as Kali Yuga progresses, it becomes more and more departed from the reality of everything belongs to God. So to help the demigod become relieved of pride, he's showing this confidence. He did the same thing with Brahma. And the Brahma knew all that people. He did a similar thing with Indra in the Govardhan Lila. He did it differently. Anyway, it's different. So it's not, there's only one way to do things. think Lord is very versatile. But he, with the Gopis, he left the Rasa. Just left. Disappeared. Because he detected, they were feeling, oh, now Krishna's alone with us. And certainly feeling love, but also feeling some pride. They went mad searching for him. Because that madness in searching for him burned the pride. Pride will destroy a human group. Just like this other example. And anger will destroy a human group. Pride will destroy a human group. So after exhibiting that to the demigods, then they were feeling freedom from pride. And very tiny before the Supreme Lord. And that's a spiritual conception of humility. This is another point. But the spiritual conception of humility is not trembling, cowering, and something like that. That's a material conception. Rather, the spiritual conception of humility is before God, I'm very tiny. God is very great. And I'm very tempted. And then Prabhupada says, and next is therefore I should serve him. Then the mood of humility that is recognized, the spiritual conception of humility, I should serve him. And I should serve him unmixed. And with a clean and pure heart. God is very big, I'm very tiny, therefore I should serve him. That's our position. And then the rest of the chapter goes on to the demigods. This is Drumala explaining to the king the position of the Supreme Lord, who then in various forms appears and exhibits different leelas. And some leelas are to give protection to a dear devotee, Lord, who is in difficulty. Several of them are indicated like that. As the basic principles, according to Bhagavad Gita's explanation, these things are fulfilled by the appearances of the Lord in this world, even as Lila avatars, like Bhavana. You think one of the Lila avatars. But the another purpose of his appearance was that then he got lost the kingdom to Bhagavad. So he took the kingdom back from Bhagavad and gave it again to the demigod. So in very fascinating ways, the Lord does these three things when he appears. The long list of how he did what he did is not here. This is just a little summary, but as mentioned yesterday, this is one of many such lists of forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, which was a question asked in the first canto, chapter 1. And then again, and then again, and then again. So it's an important topic. We have already, this is the 11th canto, so the 10th canto has already been spoken. So the understanding of Krishna's transcendental position has been illuminated, preceded by the first 9 cantos, certainly. And now here again, these Uttama Bhaktas, Uttama Adhikari Bhaktas are once again, illuminating and enlightening the king. But going back, the king was doing a Karmakanda ritual. It was religious, but Karmakanda rituals are not the same as pure devotional service. But the king had great qualifications. So by their association, he could then understand what he really should be doing. But what the purpose of life and how to execute the purpose of life takes one's mind upon the personality of God and carry out one's duties in full consciousness of this thing. Same for us. Before Krishna conscious contact and association, we're all doing so many things. We may even be doing those same things, you know, externally. But the through association, principally beginning with hearing, then consciousness is improved or elevated, or spiritual consciousness becomes awakened, so we can do those things, the cooking and cleaning and working and family and things of this world, we can do them in Krishna consciousness. Satisfaction of Krishna, and hearing about the glories of the Supreme Lord, again, just like Mr. Eden, chapter 10, the medium for the connection between chapter 9 and 10 is hearing the opulences of the Supreme Lord helps to stimulate devotion for Him. To understand how great is God, tells us how tiny we are. Therefore, it's uncertain. Prabhupada would say it like this: all scriptures teach God is great, but how great is God, that they do not know. And the more we understand how great is God, it's impetus for serving Him. Clarity in Godhood or divinity of the cause of all causes. I mean, it's a nice phrase. What does it mean? And so it becomes the elaboration that's being given by this example of our friend Rishi Siddhartha to the demigods in this chapter. So it's not happening before our eyes, but just by hearing, we can also grow spiritually. In our appreciation for personality, God, and position, and thus be very, very clear and focused on serving Him and continuing our activity, but in the mood of serving Him. And then we can do it with the mind attached to me, which is what she said about the Kankana, Kulaya, Kankana, Kankana, and this is any discussion. Questions?
The other kind of humility.
Real humility is I'm no longer at the center. Real humility is Krishna's at the center. So let's explore a little bit our dear friend false ego. False ego puts oneself at the center. So as I'm looking around the temple room here, I'm seeing things, and my consciousness is right at the center. It's just like, standard everyday consciousness. It's pleasing, it's not pleasing. It makes me happy, it doesn't make me happy. It's like I'm at the center. And humility in that paradigm isn't what real humility is. The living entity, when there's real humility, is still conscious, but it's what's pleasing to Krishna. It's making Krishna happy. And the purpose of my existence is making Krishna happy, although he's already happy. It's just like my happiness is making Krishna happy. My pleasure is engaging in activities that are Krishna's pleasure activities. And that's humility. And then it doesn't, when I'm feeling humble, it doesn't become proud. It doesn't warp or move into, morph, that's the word, into pride. It's because there's no connection. Once Prabhupada was asked, more than once, but one time when he was asked about is there room for pride in Krishna consciousness? Because as we discussed yesterday morning, Narottam Das Thakur says there's place for everything in Krishna consciousness. Place for anger. And the place for pride, Prabhupada said, I am part of Krishna's party. Part of Krishna's family, and Krishna is part of the parcel. It's intrinsic to the soul. And Krishna's eternal servant. That's my relationship with Krishna. And I cherish it. Love it, and I'm happy with it, and proud to be situated in my service relationship with Krishna. And that doesn't move, it energizes, doesn't degrade, it elevates. Krishna is in the center. Something that may help for you to understand or cultivate the proper Buddha humility, at least for me, is very, very powerful. I mentioned it the other day. You got somewhere along the way. Prahlad speaking to Lord Srinivas, saying, there's nothing between you and me except one thing. The master, I'm the servant, there's nothing else. Don't take pride in that. I'm the servant, you're the master, there's nothing else. Now that's the Vaikuntha conception, it can become elevated further and further through intimacy of love and the Braja conception of love. But still, that loss is a relative different balance of love to be in Krishna's service. So that element is where there's no pride. the counter voice, the second forest fire, after Krishna had extinguished the second forest fire, they started speculating. Who is this Krishna? Maybe he's a demigod. And then they thought, well, we're Krishna's equals, so that means we're demigods too, so that's fantastic, we're demigods too. Let's go have lunch. So it's not their intimacy of love eclipsed any sense of pride. They just have a bhava, a feeling of being Krishna's equal. And some even as being his superiors. His common friends. When Krishna came out of the Kaliya Lake, it was the end of the day, and Krishna made the suggestion, was it so far to get from here to Nandagram? At the end of the day, let us just stay here by the side of the river Jamuna. The river Jamuna is our life. So we'll stay here when you come from there. Yes, that's a very good idea. And we'll pick a place where it'll be safe because of the heat of the summer, so there'll be no fire. Sure enough, there'll be a fire anyway. But no fire. And if some friends of Kaliya come and try to cause us trouble, we have big sin. We'll protect the Krishna, don't we? He just finished subduing Kaliya. Don't worry, we'll protect him. It's love. No pride. Service with love. No pride. That's the protection of such a contamination. And that's really the one. That's food service. Different varieties of food service. Rasa.
Covered and it's in front of the temple. Anyway, so he would sit with others and
engaging Krishna Kathas. Because I met one man, Dr. Sukamal Roy Chaudhary, who used to also go to Mayapur. And before Prabhupada came to America, he would sit in that same place and hear the Krishna Katha. So it was a place to help him go. He had a relationship with Mother of ours. So Yasamati Nandana was having a conversation with Mother of ours, who was belittling or materially coloring Prabhupada's achievements in the Krishna consciousness by saying, well, he was very good at business. So he just used his very good business skill to spread Krishna consciousness in the West. And Yasavati Nandana exploded. But don't you know it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that you cannot assist others to further Krishna consciousness unless it's direct empowerment by Krishna? So that's the application. And Prabhupada went back. Yasavati Nandana went back and told Prabhupada how Mata Kumaras was speaking. And Prabhupada asked him, how did you reply? He said, oh, I told him, I didn't reply. He said, very good. And this is empty. By considering, by material estimation or material gift or power, when you can do something in devotional service, that's all. So now, that's something other than when you're in front of your altar and chanting japa. Krishna has empowered someone to help you begin the process of devotional service and simply continue further the process of devotional service. It's not that person, it's Krishna's empowerment, Krishna Shakti, with the recipients of that. So now you're the recipients of some Krishna Shakti, and you're some mornings is nice and some mornings is not as nice. And when you're chanting, it's not just see the altar, it's hear the holy name. That's the measure. But some mornings hearing the holy name, some mornings hearing the mind is somewhere else other than hearing the holy name. So why is that? That's your question. And what to do about it? How to get it nice all the time? That's the question. It's in the stage of unsteady bhakti, anishtha bhakti. There's unsteadiness, that's the nature. The unsteadiness is due to impurities of the heart. So before the steady stage comes the anarcha-nivritti stage. You're familiar? Yes, anarcha-nivritti stage. And the anarcha-nivritti stage is crossed by Vajna Priya, that nicely. So we practice chanting attentively. And practice and practice and practice and practice is like cleaning a dirty pot. You practice just clean and scrub and scrub and scrub. And so change the dharma in the margin of it. The mirror of the heart becomes cleansed by the chanting of the holy name. So do that attentively, do it attentively, do it attentively, do it. The mind wanders, do it attentively. And by diligent striving, and Krishna seeing that diligent striving, Vidmanod means Sudhir Sakam, the cleansing takes place. And then comes Shetiness. So, the unsteady is we're paying the price for our past foolishness of misuse of free will, and so we're implicating attraction for the impermanent instead of attraction for Krishna. We're paying the price for that. But so do we continue, even when the mind goes to the impermanent, we bring the mind back to Krishna. And strive at things and continue abhyasa. Minimally. And then when you realize, I can't do this on my own, then it's the feeling you call it for Krishna's descending mercy.
in addition to your effort. We intensify our effort plus Krishna's mercy. However long it takes, we continue to strive on that. Thank you very much for the profile.